A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And today's episode is Sharon. She's an award-winning qualified ADHD coach who specializes in providing support and strategies for people with ADHD and those that support them.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right. This is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Here we are in Melbourne's Spring of Deception. Some days 28, some days 12. It's just... The weather flirt is at her very best in October, I think.
Oh, my goodness. And there's big floods, there's fires,
snow, you name it.
It's all happening, Australia.
It is. So, yeah.
We're thinking of all you peas out there that are dealing with that. My goodness.
Anyway, right now, right here, it's okay.
We're okay. I'm at my house because there's lots of illnesses. So, hopefully, next week I'll be back sitting next to Kate.
Hopefully. Anyway.
Anyway, we never know.
No, we never know. It's just the, you know, you're only one day away from gastro. It's Mandy's greatest saying.
That's right. It's my favourite saying.
Yeah.
I go to the supermarket and I think, is today the day?
Today the day. Well, I wish that I'd bought Gatorade or whatever else I should have bought. Do I need more Domestos? I don't know.
It's just a good way to prepare yourself because you could have all the plans in the world. And
it's the best.
It's toilet time.
Yeah, it's toilet time. Anyway, let's introduce our guest.
You'd like to say hello and introduce yourself.
Oh, hello. Thank you, ladies. I'm so excited to be here. I'm Sharon Collin. I am the owner of The Functional Family and I am a certified ADHD coach.
Wow. Yeah, The Functional Family. I haven't got one of them, but I really that you do.
It was almost called, the company was almost called The Dysfunctional Family. Yes. So I'm sure we'll get that.
All right, let's start with our three questions. So, do you have a song or a band or music that either lifts you up in the good times or, like, helps you in the bad?
Oh, yes. I would have to go for my, you know, a band from my hometown, from Brisbane. Mm. They're called The Last Dinosaurs and there is a song called Honolulu. Okay. And every time I listen to it, I just feel good.
Oh, that's what we want. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that
lifts me up.
That sounds great. We'll put that on the Spotify list so people can find it.
Excellent.
My favourite Aussie band is Ballpark Music and they are also from Brisbane.
There you go.
Producing good music.
They're all happy up there. There's so much
happy
sunshine.
Happy the sunshine. They got vitamin D. They got dopamine.
All the bands from Melbourne.
Melbourne are emo bands.
Emo with hay fever.
Emo. Which makes it hard to sing.
It's really. Anyway, what about, and I can see some behind you.
Yes.
But did you win any awards at school or in your time as your business?
In my business, I not so many in school, but school, I don't know, but definitely in my business. I have won a best podcast of the year, which you guys all like. Awesome. Make a People's Choice Making a Difference, local business awards, and there's lots of ones. I really like the People's Choice ones because they are showing that the community is getting behind beautiful people with ADHD.
So the podcast award, who gave that to you? Like what?
That's a company called Oz Mumpreneur, which my favourite because I love women supporting other women.
Yes.
And I think we don't do that, like we don't get recognised enough for the incredible jobs that we do. And being a mum and also having a business is quite tricky. So I do love that organisation. They are lovely.
Yes, brilliant women.
And also very inclusive, which I really like. Yeah. They really do a good job of that.
Yeah, and they really pioneered something that we didn't know we were missing, was to celebrate women, mumpreneurs or whatever you want to call
it. Yes.
Yeah.
Ah, cool. Well, they look very pretty. People can't see them, but they are all lined up beautifully in little cubes, and it's very, very cute.
Gorgeous.
Mandy and I also have our awards behind us. There's none. All right, and our favourite question, why are you a P or part of the P community?
So I have a husband that has very severe ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm an ADHD coach, so for me to say that is it's definitely on the extreme side of the of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I have three beautiful boys that have ADHD as well. We also have Tourette's, ODD, sensory processing disorder, specific learning disorders in there as well.
Yep.
And, so I'm definitely living it every day and part of this beautiful community. And I've got to say, all my favourite people in the world have ADHD.
They really do, don't they? A lot of mine do as well.
Yeah.
Yes. It just means, you know, I was trying to describe to someone what it was like the other day and I said, every day is a sleepover when you've got, when, you know, that's my life. When people are like, oh, thank God the sleepover's over. No, it never ends here.
It just runs, you know, our household runs at quite an intensity, right?
Yeah.
Which I think that for some families they can do like a peak of intensity and then they relax. But a lot of times for people with, when they have neurodiversity in the family, it runs at a higher level of intensity a lot of the time, which is why we see that burnout component coming in a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So, yes, I often make the joke that someone needs to film my family for a documentary series. That's what
I know.
Hurry up.
I know. But it has to be done nicely.
Yeah, it does. It does have to be done nicely.
I need the edit. I want to be able to edit it. Not letting somebody horrible do it. But, yes.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about, like, obviously you said your husband has severe ADHD. Did you know that or when was he diagnosed?
Yeah, so when I first met Anthony, I could pick it straight away. Like, there's no avoiding it. He's only got two modes. Like, he's very high on the hyperactivity section. So easy to identify.
Yes.
And I've had a little bit of exposure to ADHD before. My brother was diagnosed and I looked after a lovely little boy that had ADHD as a nanny. And so I could pick it, and the same things that he struggled with I found really exciting. Like, he's very spontaneous. He's kind of like very energetic. He's quite gifted. Like, he can do lots of things without reading. He's never read a manual in his life.
Yeah.
but when I talked to him about his experiences growing up, they were full of trauma. Mm. Like, his experience of school, being socially isolated as the naughty kid, being told that he was never going to amount to anything because of his behaviour, and very much growing up in like the 80s and 90s where we were only just sort of starting to grasp about neurodiversity and how to be inclusive. Luckily, his parents were really great, so he had that great backing at home, but had a terrible time, you know, school and socially, I think. And so when we went on to have our beautiful little boys, my first boy was exactly like, they are the same. My husband and my eldest son, they are so similar. And I'm looking at him. I know very clearly that he is going to have the same struggles with Anthony. Like, even as a baby, he was so unsettled and so super active. Mm. I mean, Anthony walked at 7 months to get around, like very, very active all the time. Mm. And Xavier was exactly the same. And so I was looking at my little boy and then looking at my husband and thinking, oh my gosh, how can I protect him from that trauma that Anthony experienced?
Mm.
And I started researching ADHD really heavily. Mm. And then during that time, went on to have two other boys that have ADHD as well. And I was just really keen to change that storyline from Anthony's story to for my boys to have a different path and have a different story. And when we got our first son diagnosed, they gave us, I don't know if you guys had a better experience with the diagnostic process. I mean, this was 15 years ago now. They gave us a photocopied pamphlet about ADHD. Mm. And I was kind of like stunned. I was like, but where's the support? Like, where can we... Where can we go? Yeah. What can we do? This, like, my child was on the roof, you know? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to raise a functional human being out of this? Because we were all burnt out. Mm. And and I just looked around for support and I couldn't find what I was looking for at that stage.
No.
And so we decided as a family that we would create it. Wow. And that's how the functional family came about, that name came about. And I love to, my kids probably won't say this, but I love to run experiments on my household. And this is what I did before I formally trained as an ADHD coach. So I'd do weird things. Like I'd read up books and I'd read up parenting strategies and I was like almost obsessive with it.
Yeah.
And I'd like do things like I'd get them to come into a messy room and I'd document their body language and like what they were doing. And then I'd get them to come into a clear room and see what they were doing. And how that changed. And I documented everything in these weird procedures because, you know, I had three kids and I was desperately trying to find a way to make life easier.
Yeah.
And then I started sharing what I knew and what was coming up and what strategies in all the books that I was reading was working, what ones weren't. And then that obviously led me to study it formally as well. So, you know, it's been quite a journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And when you were saying all that study, I just remember when my twins were little, so they saw a pediatrician from birth because they were preemie and it was a high-risk pregnancy, so we didn't have that sudden diagnosis. Like, we sort of knew things were churning away. And I just remember the amount of books I bought on ADHD, and some of them were so, like, you'd literally throw it across the room because it was just so repugnant to me. It didn't reflect my family. Obviously, antiquated research, even though, you know, ADHD is very well researched and especially the medication side is extremely well researched, but yet some of the ideas were they just felt horrible to me. And recently I moved house and I was like, look at all these books I bought, like so many, because I was so desperate because nobody could talk to you like you, even though I had the most amazing pediatrician that I could text, there was no group to go to say, this is amazing. Lived experience of adults with ADHD who could say to me, do this, because I don't think my mind works the same as my boys does. So why am I telling them what to do?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think the more parents read and the more, and we've got access to so much information these days, that because they consume all this knowledge, when it gets to the heat of the moment and the moment is emotionally charged, they freeze, right? So they trying to draw on or access all this information that they've absorbed in their brain and they're trying to recall the right strategy, but their kid's screaming in front of them, which makes them, you know, like it's stressful, so they go back into their amygdala, right?
Mm.
And they just panic and they don't know what to do. And so we really have to give people really easy, practical strategies. I think that's where we miss out. Like there's high-level psychological strategies which have their place, right? But sometimes we need to take some of that pressure off and give them things to do in that heat of the moment as well.
My kid's on the roof. Their twin brother's on the roof.
Yeah.
Got three other kids in the house. I've got all my friends coming over with their twins.
Yeah. And what do I do?
Like, who do I get down first?
Yeah.
Well, all of us walk in and go, wow, okay. They're all scaling fences.
Exactly. So some of the advice that I've been given is just, you know, like over the years, I think it's getting better now, but, you know, like you, it just doesn't feel right. Mm. And so I think it's really great to be able to empower parents and even individuals with ADHD to actually ask people what they need, you know, And for parents to have an approach that actually feels nice for them.
Yeah, yeah. And so your son was how old when he was diagnosed?
He was about 7,
yeah,
I think. And Anthony was 7 and then got diagnosed at 7 and re-diagnosed at 40. He went back
so
and got
So did he have meds at it. 7?
No,
just his diagnosis.
Yeah, his parents back then, I mean, back then it was kind of had that negative feeling about medication.
Oh, sure did, yeah.
Yeah, he does wish that they did, but, you know, who can
you
say
can't,
for
you
the,
can't go
the
back.
80s?
Yeah, and,
and it was a product of their time as well.
Yeah.
But they didn't not treat it. They, to their credit, they did heavy-duty occupational therapy. They like they threw resources at it, right? Mm. So they did make lots of allowances and you know, did support him in other ways.
Mm. Right. Okay. And so when if you don't have to answer, but when he was 40, did he choose to go on medication himself?
He chose to trial it.
Yep.
So what happened to go back to get the re-diagnosis is his job changed at that time. And he was now went from being, you know, very, very active in his job to having to sit at a desk. And he was like, okay, this I can't do this. Mm. And so he did a trial for just to see if that made things better, which I think it did. I'm never quite sure that he got to the right dosage thing then. But then his job changed back, so it was okay. So he was able to go back to, you know, just managing it through. He manages it quite hectically through exercise and, you know, the coping mechanisms that he's developed over the years. Yeah. So it goes okay. Yeah.
I'm just always interested into whether adults choose to be medicated or not, you know, because I have made that decision for my children. And so I'm always interested to know what adults choose to do for themselves.
Well, our kids are, and I think as an ADHD coach, I think he probably could. But it's his choice, you know, and that's the thing. And he seems to be functional and it doesn't interfere with too much. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's the level of which at how much you know, when you get to be an adult and you don't have to sit quietly in a classroom all day, you kind of can pick and choose that little bit. Mm.
Okay.
And where did you go to get your study? Yeah. Where did you?
Yeah, so I trained at ADCA in New York, which is the ADHD Coaching Academy.
Wow. Did you get to move to New York by yourself for two glorious
years? No. It was actually the opposite of that. I got to get up at 3:45 in the morning and do all my work and then run around town like a drunk all day because I was so tired.
Yes.
Like people would say hello to me in the supermarket, I have no recognition who they were because I was just so tired. But I got through it, and I'm so glad I did because it is an incredible academy and I learned so much. And even though I'd been studying it for a long time before that, it gave me real confidence with adults because I'd come in really strong with parenting stuff, which is I can do that naturally. Like I live it every day. I can really with my study, like my informal study, I felt like I can do that. But knowing how to really get an adult invested in their own development and get them to have that buy-in on the solutions that they're creating for themselves and that have that accountability piece is just, I love it. It's one of my favorite things that I get to do. It was a really positive experience.
So when did you do that?
I'm going about to go into my next one, but not last year, the year before I finished that one. So it's a couple of years in there of hard work, really.
When did you start the functional family?
No, I started the functional family 6 years ago. Uh-huh. So back then we did parenting exclusively. So I didn't work with adults, and that was sharing what I knew about my family.
Like on Instagram, or where did you do that?
Yeah, so I've got a platform. So I've got a free support group with it's got about 12,000 members in there at the moment.
Wow.
I've got a platform that has a 6-week course. I've got a membership, podcast,
Yep.
Awesome. All of those things. And obviously that just hasn't appeared. That's grown over time.
Oh yeah, yeah. And a lot of work went into it. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. But I guess one of the things that I love that's my favorite is just connecting with this beautiful community, because I don't want other people to feel like we did when we got that photocopied pamphlet, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah. So it's a nice safe place for people to share a little bit about their journey, and a bit like what you guys do, you know, like you create this beautiful platform for people to feel at home in, you know, in this lovely world.
Yeah. And
you created what you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. You wanted a place where your family felt typical.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And that there's no judgment. Like it's, yeah, it's, and even though the business is called the Functional Family, you know, it is very much real. Like really is about not being, like I always say, like our family is never going to look perfect. It's never going to look like everyone else's social media feeds, right? Like we have, it's a messy old life.
Yeah.
But we have found a way to make our life work for us. It's not going to be perfect, but we're happy. All right. And that's the best, you know, that's the best thing for me. It doesn't have to look good to anyone else, but it has to feel good to be in.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, what is functional? There's all these phrases that, you know, like I'm separated from my ex-husband. So someone said to me, oh, you have a broken home. And I'm like, no, the home's not broken. What's broken about the home? But I know that those phrases were really big for during the 80s, you know, you broke your home. Really, the joy of a functional family is knowing this is how our family functions, and it's nothing like your family. You know, you might have one child that really needs this, and then you might only have one child, or you might have 10 children. They're all different functions.
Yep. Mm. And just identifying what that is, like there's so much power in that, and being, you know, like knowing that your family runs at a, you know, different pace, different intensity, different, you know, like levels of energy. You know, there's so much power in that, and being able to advocate and go, oh no, actually we're not going to commit to that at this stage. We're going to do this. We're going to do X, Y, Z. And that's perfectly okay.
Yeah.
You know, but a lot of people get swept up in other people's shoulds.
I think that's a huge topic to cover.
It really is. And
keep up with other families and then trying to have that courage in yourself to say, no, it doesn't suit us.
Yeah, and acknowledging then that when you go to an event, and it's less and less for me now because my children are older and half of my kids have left home and, you know, but when you go to an event, the whole way there you've got anxiety. You're thinking about what I'm going to do to make this event easier for my children. You're not thinking about this is going to be a fun picnic. You're going to be like, we are going to run in that lake. We are going to try and go down the slide backwards when there's other people coming. Like all these things that you're doing, and you actually have the worst day. And you don't connect with any of your friends because you're just helping your children be safe. And then you're like, why did I say yes? Really hard to not, but then you want to fit in and you want your family to go to the Christmas party. And it's really tricky.
It's that balance, hey. And, you know, I think that's where we touched on that burnout piece earlier, that often the mums, like, or the primary caregiver, like often the mums end up developing this hypervigilance state, right? Yeah. We're just on alert, right? And so you're there and you're doing the things, but you are constantly on the lookout for dangers and, you know, like you're anticipating things all the time. And even when your child is not struggling in that moment, our body is still having that reaction because we're anticipating that they might, right? So that burnout piece is a huge topic for this community. And it doesn't matter whether the mum is neurotypical or neurodivergent.
No.
Just, you know, having a child with extra needs can result in that burnout, you know, because of that hypervigilance.
I was saying to my therapist the other day that, and I won't go into much of this because my boys are bigger now, but at night, if one of them wakes up, I have a full adrenaline rush. Like I am awake, and I said, I have been having that basically since they were born because they were in the NICU. Right. So I've always had this thing with them. They're 18 now, that it doesn't go away. Like, I don't know how to get that to go away. And I think I can. And then something will happen. And I'm like, no, I needed that adrenaline today. I still need to protect this family. It's fun times.
I mean, ADHD itself is a dysregulated nervous system, right?
Yeah.
And I sometimes feel like parts of that are contagious.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, because their dysregulation results in other people's dysregulation. And so it, that regulation piece and supporting, like I think this is the part where we miss out in helping families. We often focus a lot on, you know, therapies or the child individually, but it's bigger than that because every therapy is giving that is parents' homework.
Yes, right? You can talk to Mandy about that.
We're piling it on.
Mm.
And as a family, we have to be able to survive this. We know that parents who are burnt out, right, just to give you like a little example of things that I've noticed, like a mum who is burnt out gives her child less eye contact, right? Mm. So she does these things like looking away, like eye rolling, like trying to distance herself, like sensory overload. Mm. I do it myself, like on those days where the boys are hard.
Do that.
Oh, so do I.
I'm like,
so
stop touching me, right?
Yep, yep.
Makes me want to howl and rock in the corner.
Yeah. Like, yes. And you're talking to me. I love you so much, but you're talking so loud about such a boring topic for so long and I can't look at you anymore, but I love you and I want you to talk to me. It's this weird juxtaposition.
It's so confronting. And then we've got sensory seeking children generally who are want, like, what do they do when we turn away? They come more.
Yep.
Right?
They pounce. I'm down, we're pouncing.
Oh yeah.
So we have to be able to help the whole family regulate.
Yes. It's,
and help the whole family with executive functions, regardless of whether they're neurodivergent or not. We have to be able to support the whole family because when we start to make the primary, especially if I love to support the primary caregiver, right?
Mm.
One, because I love supporting women. I think generally that's my market.
Yeah.
And so if we can make her feel like she's kicking some goals, give her a little bit more time, like just take a few things, give her a little bit more time, give her a little bit opportunities to have that little pocket of calm in her day, then you start to see that she can tolerate some of that sensory seeking a little bit better. Like there's the power. She starts to feel like she's not a failure. She's got a little bit of more fuel in the tank. Because she's had those little pockets and those little wins, and each one's of those little wins, like they build on top of each other. We get so much negative feedback about our kids, and you know, I know you guys know what I'm talking about. Those little looks and those little comments, and they slowly, like I often say, it's like death by a thousand cuts. Like they each leave their little mark, and we lose a little bit of our confidence, right? So building up that primary caregiver's confidence again. They start to be able to advocate for themselves better, advocate for their kids better, be confident in their approach, and also tell people what they need. Mm. Often we don't talk to people about what we need enough.
No. No. Well, I think it's scary if you think what you need isn't what anybody else needs. So often the only people that we tell are other people that are fully burdened. Mm. So you're like, oh, here's my friend who's has this terrible thing going on in their life, I'll talk to them because, you know, they will relate. Not even that my life's terrible, but you know what I mean. And so to say to someone, I need this, when it's something that's so left of field from their sphere of family is really hard to do.
It is hard. And it is a muscle that we have to practice. Like we have to build it because no one, like from what I've learned in our community, is that sometimes people feel bad offering it too.
Yeah.
So they want to give you support, but they don't want to offend you. They don't know what support to offer. And even like I'm a bit of, I like to think I'm a bit of a martyr sometimes. Like someone will go, I'll drive the boys to soccer. And I'll be like, oh no. Oh, it's right. Like, it's okay. No, I should just say yes.
Yeah.
Just say yes. If they're offering, take it, right? So it's about taking those opportunities as well. When they're offered and asking, like, you know, asking when you can and confidently asking, like, this is how you could help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And also.
It's dawn for me. It's dawn.
And I'm not
seeing that.
Yeah, I think as well I have to be, because by the time I'm asking, I'm quite desperate, but it never looks like I am. So then I have to be emotionally ready for them to say, oh, I'm busy, because they don't know, right? And so any little bit of rejection that comes at that point really doubles down, and I just do head mulls for a month and they haven't thought about it again, you know? But Mandy and I often talk about offering help. That's our big thing whenever we do talks or whatever. We're like, it's okay to say to one of your friends or family or someone that you see in the supermarket, are you okay? Do you need me to pick that up for you? And if they say, yep, you just walk off. Like it's really, you know, to take the burden off the carer, it would be lovely if people around the carer just offered sometimes.
And how good does just someone offering feel?
Oh, even if you can't take it.
Yeah, even if you can't, like it just takes, it just makes you feel so nice. Like, yeah it really does.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're working with predominantly mothers, I'm hearing, what are some of the reoccurring themes that people are talking about that they need help with?
I think that, well, what I would say is that a lot of the time we get so in the thick of it, right? So we're just kind of surviving each day. Like we get in that state where we're just kind of, we just got to get them to school, and then we just got to get them to bed, and then we just got to do like all these things.
Yeah,
like
that. Yeah.
So we're in like this state of kind of perpetual motion, doing lots of rushing energy, right? When we know that rushing energy in the ADHD brain. So we often like make it quite hard for our kids to make good choices when we come at them with rushing energy. Emergencies, they do well in pressure and overwhelm. What we do is we work through points of friction in their day. So where are those little points? Because it's not the big meltdowns that suck our energy, right? The big meltdowns, they happen, and we tend to cope with those pretty well because they're, you know, like they might happen regularly, but we can support our kids through that. This is what generally happens. But it's those little bits of friction. Like if we anticipate that, for example, my son Harvey is going to have a problem putting socks on every day. Every day.
It's always socks.
He's going to have a problem with socks, right? He's going to have a problem with the seatbelt. So right then I'm already tensing before I even ask him to do the thing. What I love to do is to just put some framework around those little moments of friction. What can we do to make those easier? I call those problems, those little moments of friction, predictable problems. Because if you know that it is a predictable problem, it happens regularly. I love to be able to work with that family to address it, or work with that mum to address it. And we all have predictable problems. Like there's like predictable problems for us, there's predictable problems from our kids, there's predictable problems with our houses and our lives and everything. And what we can do is just, if we can remove and handle some of those, or we can create some strategies around it that work for that family uniquely or that person uniquely, that's where we see that empowerment come in. They start to go, oh, I can make that a little bit easier for myself, and they can save a little bit of time, get a little bit of momentum with solving some of those, or if not solving them, working out a way to handle them in a way that doesn't suck their life force. And that's like a common scenario is, you know, like that. Oh man, there's so many. There's ones like, overscheduling. Yeah. We have this tendency to completely overschedule our lives, you know, especially when we all want, you know, our kids to be involved in all sorts of things and develop lots of skills, you know, sensory issues, like even things like I help people with meal planning and laundry and all that sort of stuff like that. These are the little things that we don't necessarily think of when we think of ADHD, but they are executive function challenges. So creating a little bit of framework around that. Oh my gosh, if we can just take some of the pressure off, then we can really help, you know, move the families forward, make their lives just a little bit easier. Anything that lights me up, like the things that really light me up, are things that save time, effort, and create a little bit more room for joy. Because I've got three kids and run a business. I want to save time and effort because I want to be able to be the present parent sometimes, not all the time. In fact, some of the times I'm a very distracted parent.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to have those moments where I can be there and be fully there, not thinking about all the stuff that I have to do. And so for me to be able to do that in this busy, crazy life, I have to be dealing with those friction points, because otherwise when I get to those opportunities, I'm too exhausted to take them.
So true. That's a lot for me to think about, really. But yeah, so true. And I think if I go back through my parenting, some of those things come naturally. Like you're like, I'm just throwing out all those socks. They're gone. We can never accidentally find one ever again. I don't care if you wear dirty socks. We are not having those socks. You know?
Yep.
And, you know, you're like, oh. Oh, you're
fine. Tag off now.
Yeah.
Tag off.
Yeah. Or you're like, I'm just buying Jam the Label socks. They don't have seams. You know, whatever works.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever works. And I think that I love that approach, because elimination is a strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to recognize that it is a point of friction and handling it, you know, is also teaching our kids that they can do that.
Mm.
Like, we don't have to, you know, like there is a way to, you can either, you know, like you can create a strategy for it, you can eliminate it, you can delegate it, you can like decide, you can diarize it to handle it later, like when it's more appropriate. You know, there's all sorts of things that you can do with those points of friction. And we want to teach our kids that they can do that, because they're going to have lots of point of friction as they're growing up.
Do you use that term with them? Do you say? Yes. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So I either use friction for the, you know, as we're starting, and then the problem is a predictable problem. So if it's coming up again, and I've got a lovely little worksheet, actually, I can send it to you to share. It's how to workshop with your kids predictable problems, because I don't ever want to solve it for them, because I'm an ADHD coach. I want them to learn problem solving. Because they're going to have lots of problems as they come up, lots of problems every day. So I want them to be, their brain to be thinking of, how can I make this easier for myself?
This is all very handy for our kids with physical disabilities as well, which is my daughter. Mm. There's pretty good problems from the minute she wakes up.
Mm. Yep.
So this is really great language that I need too. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. I'll share the little worksheet for you. Basically what you're doing is you're asking them to tell you about it, and then you're asking them to workshop three solutions. Mm. And we view all solutions like an experiment. Right. So we're not emotionally attached to the outcome. We're not saying because there's, you know, with ADHD, there's black or white thinking, right? We're either good or bad, we're on or off. We're, you know, all these like very extreme ways of thinking. Mm. So I'm just going, no, we're taking the pressure off. We're just going to try these things.
Mm.
And if they suck, we won't do them anymore. Like we've got the best thing about the ADHD brain is it's ideas factory.
They're great
at forming ideas.
Yeah.
So I just say, that's okay, because we will come up with other ones. So we workshop those three solutions, and then we work out what one we're going to try first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lovely way of moving away from that all or nothing approach that is quite common with ADHD. Like you did this thing, it's failed, now it's ruined.
That's it, we're done.
And so I'd like to say, like, problems come up, these predictable problems come up, and we handle it. And then another problem will come up and we'll handle it.
Mm.
Like, everything is figureoutable. That Marie Forleo saying, everything's figureoutable. when you come and talk to me, we can figure it out together. Mm. And I want them to come up with a solution. The reason that I do is because all my kids have ODD.
Yeah.
And they have a lot more buy-in
when
I don't tell them. I don't give them something to push against.
When I
don't give them demands that they can get and they can push against. Mm. I let them come up with with the solution, because then they are more willing to try and more willing
to go.
Really awesome. So if you were, if you could go back now and talk to yourself when you, your son was first diagnosed, or when you first thought about it, what's something you would say to yourself?
I would say, oh, this is a bit personal now. I would say prioritize yourself more, because I think back in the early days, and this is, you know, something that I almost cringe at now, when I first, when my son first got diagnosed, I was very much about fixing it. I was like, we're going to do all the diets and we're going to do all the, read all the books, and we're going to do all that. We put him through neurofeedback and we put him through like everything. He was going to 1,000 different therapies and doing all these things. I mean, great for me, who then later created an online course about all the things. But probably we threw a lot at him. And I was coming at it from a very much like, you know, we've got to help him as much as we can. I would have taken some of that pressure off. I would have put more into myself, because I don't know if you guys know, but I was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition. So I have chronic pain, chronic issues, had half a paralyzed face for a long time, still a little bit. And so I just burnt myself out. And that's where that passion comes in, really, to support that primary caregiver, because I think the most common theme that comes across in the functional family is just how bloody tired everyone is. You know, and so we have to do a better job at looking after ourselves, the families in general, and that beautiful exhausted parent, rather than making things harder or shaming them or anything. So I would say, just, I don't know, I'd say to my, that first step, okay, go to Gwingana, do a health retreat, just go there for a while, check out, come up with your game plan there. Don't read any more books, just take a step back.
At times when doing this and all your lived experience is a little bit too much, and you think, I wish I just worked at Aldi, or are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, it's funny, because I get really energized by my clients, right? So the work side of thing is energizing. I actually adore it, and I love hearing, and it comes easily to me, right?
Yeah.
I can do it really easily. And I love the feedback that I get, like the test, like,
yes.
Hearing people's lovely feedback and stuff really makes my heart sing. But to this day, I still look, like, sometimes my kids, I'm like, oh, like even yesterday I was walking down the street and one of the mums in the street went, oh, isn't school holidays just going a bit so fast? I looked at her and she went, oh, maybe not for you. Like,
kids, wrong audience. Yeah.
I thought, oh. I didn't respond. It was just a look, but I
don't want to tear them down.
No, that's their experience.
I don't want to take away from her, but
we are not the same. No.
She didn't catch me at a really great moment. and so definitely it has its moments, right? Like, and I guess the only thing that saves us, you know, in a house where the mum has a chronic disease and and everyone else, you know, has a lot of intensity, is our systems that we fall back on. Like, we have good structure, not structures in like do this at certain times. Like, we have good support systems in place. So that is something what we fall back on, and we spend a lot of time just laughing at our own ridiculousness. We have a good giggle. There's nothing like, you know, my husband absolutely losing it with his own emotional regulation issues to then come back and go, oh my goodness, like, he's like, oh, can't believe that, like, I'm sorry about that.
My dad is 73, and he is not diagnosed, but he absolutely has ADHD. And some of our funniest stories are from him.
Yeah.
I mean, still, like, and my girls will be like, other people's grandpas don't do that. I was like, I grew up thinking other people's dads don't do this stuff. It was such a mystery until we all put the pieces together. Yeah.
But he's so warm and lovely and, you know.
Yeah, mischief.
Yeah, joy.
I would be a teenage girl and he would get the food. This is a prime example. The food shopping would come out and he'd go, whose pads are these? And then he'd throw them at us. And we'd be like, I don't think people's dads do that.
They don't even say the word pad, other people's dads.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
In the 90s. But, you know, actually he was fun. He is fun.
Yeah, super fun.
Yeah.
And I think being able to be in a spot where you can appreciate that fun actually really helps. Because if you're so burnt out, then that fun is just bloody annoying because you're like, shut up about it.
My mum will have a different embarrassing. Whereas we were like, oh, he's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some things that go on that you just often think, oh my goodness. That's why I always say like reality TV show needs to.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. If you wrote the script, people would be like, nah, that's not real.
Yeah, but I think there's something in that for you guys, and Kate saying you want to edit it because the history of ADHD in the television is shocking.
It's terrible.
Not that we have the responsibility to change that, but we definitely need to change it.
Yeah. And we need to realize that there's trickiness with it, but there's awesomeness with it, and that's how these amazing humans were born. Like, you can't change it, you can't take it away. We all have different things that we need, different scaffolding around us to cope in our lives. Theirs looks different to mine. Actually, I wouldn't give them scaffold because they'd climb to the top, but you know what I mean?
Exactly. And, you know, like, that's how boring if everyone was the same. Like, I love that that we can these days, you know, say ADHD without a negative feeling. Yeah. Like, you know, back in the day, ADHD.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a secret.
You know, yeah.
And children are talking about it at school. I have ADHD, or they can come over and, you know, I hear it.
Yeah.
The world is changing, probably still a little bit slowly. What I would love to see it change for is for women that have ADHD now too, for women, like, most people still think of ADHD like that hyperactive boy presentation, right? But for women, the truth of it is that a lot of the time they're not, they have a hyperactive brain. It looks like anxiety, right? Yes.
Oh, it's massive.
Yeah.
I think there's a few famous women coming out and talking about it now. So, interestingly, a lot of them are in media. So I suppose that's because they're famous. But I think also that brain has enabled them to do all these things that, but it's at a huge cost probably as well because it's, you know, never turning off. So, I think for me, ADHD, my boy's ADHD presented exactly how the textbook ADHD presents, incredibly active, and inattentive and attentive ADHD go hand in hand. And still look out the window at school, you know, it's not like it's constantly moving, especially when you're medicated. But I know it's a lot trickier for a few of my friends whose daughters were diagnosed post-school because it was actually once they got out of that structure of school, even though they got an amazing grade, they couldn't do uni. So, yeah, it's interesting.
And, you know, what we're missing and what people are missing, like for the women that are getting diagnosed as their kids are getting diagnosed and they've missed out on all early intervention and stuff, is that we're missing out on upskilling people with executive function skills. And so, like, we have a saying in ADHD coaching is the pills don't give you the skills, right? So you need to, they just level the playing field, right? So they make it easier to learn, but we still need to be able to give our kids the executive function skills. They got to learn that.
Yeah, and it's
And that's practice. Yeah. And so we need to be able to support families in a way that they can actually help their kids with that or help, help themselves with that to, build those muscles up. Because there is neuroplasticity, right? Like, we can learn new executive function skills. Like, we can change and develop. We're always changing and growing and stuff all the time. But we have to be able to support, especially these women that have missed years and years of intervention, any sort of therapy, like.
They've been mothers.
Yep.
Thrown into this world. Yeah.
Judging themselves so harshly.
Their inner voice is nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, they've just never been given the opportunity to even, you know, like use that executive function muscle and develop those skills. And so that's one of like the best parts of what I get to do, because I get to go like, hey, let's practice this bit. Like, let's just workshop this a little bit, see what they come up with and roll it out, practice it. And, you know, like I love it when people go, oh, my God, I did a thing. Like, I did this thing. And I you know, I get these little emails like, I did it. And I every time I get it, I go, oh, my gosh.
Yes.
You know.
Doing a wonderful job.
Yes, so great.
What are your dreams for your business?
Oh, I've got so many. So I want to build I've got a membership at the moment. That's a low-cost membership. Yep. And the reason that I want, or the reason I created that, is I know that not everyone can afford to have an ADHD coach.
Yeah, not everyone has CIS, your community.
We don't. So I think that I've created that in a way that people can have access to an ADHD coach without having to pay for ADHD coaching. Awesome. And so I've got more reach with that. So we do like a masterclass each month. We tackle a theme. They get a template. You know, we have a mindset session and everything like that. So that is what I want to build next. But, you know, I've got so many things. Like, really my motivation behind this is to help families just like mine and to help this beautiful community feel supported and have strategies to try, right? Like, I want to break down all of the misinformation and just give them like, hey, how about we just try this thing? Just see how that floats out.
Yeah.
And take away some of that confusion for them to make room for joy, because we're only here for a short time. And it can't be just surviving every day. Like, life is just too short for that. We need to have those moments. It doesn't have to look beautiful all the time, but we need to have those moments where we are happy, you know, in our family life. And so any moments that we can create that, or any sort of, you know, tools that I can give to allow a little bit more of that, that's what I want to do. That's the dream for this business.
Oh, what a perfect dream.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before we finish, is there anything that you would love the peas to know?
Oh, just that you're doing a great job, you guys, and also the people at home. Like, it's hard. It's hard out there, right? And, you know, like it's often unsupported. It's thankless. You know, so I just want to say thank you for all the incredible work that you do for your kids and for yourselves and advocating for your family in a world that often is a bit spiky, has some spiky edges. And I really think that we all need to give ourselves a big pat on the back for all the incredible things they do. And do take some time out where you can, those little pockets of calm. Wingana isn't reachable for all of us, you know, taking those big week breaks, but those little moments.
Maybe nobody knows if you sit in the car park at Aldi for 10 minutes before coming home. Nobody knows.
Oh, relate.
Now my family knows because I'm on that Life 360. But before that, they did not know.
Yeah, but if you're close to the entrance, Mandy, they can't tell if you're still shopping. I have done exactly this.
It's self-care to sit in that car.
Oh, self-care. The greatest.
Yeah, you know, even sometimes just in the garage in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Takes them a couple of moments to realise you're home. It's all right.
Come out. Open the door. What are you doing?
Nothing.
Are you coming in? Coming in?
it's those little moments, and just being also kinder in how we talk to ourselves too. Like, any time that I hear a person, especially a person with ADHD, say, I should do this, or, you know, like, I've been told I should be doing this or whatever. Like, there's a lot of, like, a person with ADHD doesn't want to hear should, like, not from themselves, not from anyone else. We have to be kinder in how we talk to ourselves as well. So, like, we're doing something that's hard, and we're doing a pretty good job at it. So,
true. Listen to that, please.
Listen to that.
Thank you, Sharon, so much. We've learned a lot today.
Thank you.
We'll put all your details in the show notes and so people can come and find you. And congratulations on building such an incredible business.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for the incredible work you guys are doing. I have listened to your podcast for years, so I'm very excited to talk to you today.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. ADHD is very close to our hearts. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.